Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Print Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, joined today by Mr. Marius Ruit. Let's get into the news of today. And the first story we're going to talk about is a little bit about the expanded roster of ideas that the Inkonto Sizwe Party, run by Jacob Zuma, is pushing. We have the original manifesto from MK, which seemed to be something almost written by ChatGPT, so generic and bland and vague was it. But on the campaign trail, the MK party have been expanding on their ideas for what they would do if they ran the country. And it's not particularly original stuff. In fact, I think almost every single one of these ideas has been pitched either by someone in the ANC, by the EFF, sometimes by Zuma himself over the past couple of years. But they're kind of all brought together now under a unified banner. So there's a lot of the sort of greatest hits, moving away from coal towards accelerating a nuclear program, which is something that was a big feature of the Zuma years. Hold a referendum to scrap the constitution in its entirety and replace it with a parliamentary system. Nationalize strategic mines, including ArcelorMittal, South Africa, and Sasol. Mines force major South African companies to relist on the Joburg Stock Exchange, withdraw South Africa from the quote-unquote weaponized International Criminal Court. This was after South Africa ran afoul of it for allowing the dictator of Sudan to leave the country after supposed to have been being arrested here. So a lot of these are ideas we've heard before. Land is also going to be nationalized. We're also seeing something like massive increases of social grants. Everyone gets 1,500 rand for the unemployed, and old age pensions get doubled from 2,000 rand a month to 4,500 rand a month. Maurice, what do you make of these plans? A lot of this is kind of within the ANC's wheelhouse. In fact, recently the ANC itself has been moving in the direction of a lot of these things, talking about a basic income grant, passing the expropriation bill, which seeks to allow essentially government seizure of property without compensation, a whole range of other things. But this is kind of even more extreme than the EFF you suggested in our pre-show discussion.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff like creating an upper house of traditional leaders and getting rid of making parliament the highest decision-making body in the land again. I mean, older listeners will remember that's how it was under apartheid. There was a big deal in the 1950s where parliament effectively was made the final court of appeal in South Africa. And that basically makes parliamentarians above ordinary people. So it's all quite problematic, and just yeah, it's I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you just look at this and you want to laugh. It's all these solutions are really stuck in the 1950s, 1960s. If we even implemented 10% of the MK Party's manifesto, we'd have to rename South Africa Venabobwe because that would be the economic outcomes. Some kind of mix of Venezuela and Zimbabwe, and I mean a lot of this stuff. I mean, I'm actually not opposed to increasing something like the old age pension, but it's got to be funded. I mean, it would be great if we could give everybody over the age of say 17 South Africa 5,000 rand, but we simply can't afford it. It's these things aren't funded, even a big. I'm not opposed to it at a fundamental level, but we simply can't afford it. It's one of those things. The only way you're going to end poverty and unemployment and all that kind of stuff in South Africa isn't through this magically giving people money, which the country doesn't have, but it's through growing the economy and creating jobs and making it easy for people to create businesses and for businesses to be able to grow in that. And it's not the way that the MK party wants to run things. Yeah, so it's also, I mean, you have to wonder, I mean, the MK party wants to repeal the constitution, and Jacob Zuma under oath twice swore to uphold that very same constitution. So it really does ask a lot of questions about the fellow. And I mean, what does he actually think? I mean, I think a lot of this stuff, is he actually a true believer behind this stuff? Unfortunately, I think the answer is probably yes. But at least some of the more bonkers stuff he said isn't in that manifesto. He said that if the MK party came to power, they'd get rid of the secret ballot. Because he said, why should black people be voting for different parties? You know, we should see what how all black people are voting. Because obviously all black people have a single homogenous hive mind and don't have disagreements or anything like that. And they'd all be voting for the MK party if they could. So yeah, this is pretty bonkers. And, you know, it's quite scary to think that the MK party is probably going to be the third biggest party in parliament after the 29th of May.
So I agree, a lot of really bad ideas here. And you kind of, you know, while many of these will never be implemented, you can see how the MK party in coalition with the ANC could drag them in the direction of some of these absolutely terrible ideas. There's already sympathy within the ANC for a lot of these ideas. There's already movement by the ANC on some of these ideas, like I said, with regards to things like property rights. So that is definitely a major concern going forward. And I think it'll be a very important time for civil society, political parties, the courts, etc., to defend the Constitution from attacks by a party that, as you say, it may be the third biggest party in Parliament, maybe the fourth biggest party in Parliament, and it looks like its agenda will be explicitly anti-constitutional. And that should, as someone who, you know, the South African Constitution is not perfect, but damn, it's pretty good compared to a lot of the alternatives. So I think it should be defended quite squarely by everyone who wants prosperity and freedom in South Africa. Okay, let's move on to our next story. And this is to do with South Africa's grey listing and also our connections to terrorist organizations around the world. So South Africa was relatively recently grey listed. That is, put on a list of countries whose financial controls are not really up to scruff when it comes to preventing criminality, fraud, terrorist financing, that kind of stuff. And a report by the Financial Intelligence Center, which is a group funded by the EU, among other groups, has put out a report talking about instances where South African nonprofit organizations or NGOs that were not being carefully monitored by the government were funneling money directly into the hands of terrorist groups, namely Al-Qaeda in Syria and Al-Shabaab in Somalia. One story that the report details is of a number of South African students who were sent off to an extremist madrasa in Syria to essentially be instructed to become radical preachers. They were apparently all given 100,000 rand in cash, which then was smuggled through the airport by them with the help of corrupt officials, it seems, taken to Syria and handed over to people affiliated with Al-Qaeda. There's also been some indication that a Somali supporter of Al-Shabaab, who was in South Africa, managed to infiltrate an NGO and funnel money to Al-Shabaab through some of his contacts there. So pretty bad stuff, because, of course, not only, you know, do we really not want to have a terrorist presence in South Africa, it's destabilizing, it can cause all sorts of problems, it puts us on the watch list and gives us the enmity of, you know, everyone in the world, from China to Russia to America to the European Union. But this is also exactly the kind of stuff that's going to keep us on the gray list, which hurts our financial institutions. Maurice, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of a reflection of the breakdown in the rule of law in South Africa. You know, people know that even though if there are laws about things, they simply aren't enforced. And that's why we have gone off the gray list, because people use South Africa as this kind of a laundering hub. I suppose it's partly also we're a victim of, in a way, South Africa's success. You know, South Africa's got very extensive and deep financial markets, you know, got a sophisticated banking system. So it's probably fairly easy to get money overseas if you know what you're doing. But yeah, I think this is just, as I say, I think this is part of the breakdown of the rule of law. You know, if we had probably a better kind of foreign intelligence service, these kind of things could be monitored a bit better, you know. And I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if there's quite a few South Africans have gone to overseas to fight for ISIS. We know a lot of people from Western countries, the UK and America, Australia, etc., have gone to fight for ISIS or gone to, you know, live with them. Some women have gone over there to live with ISIS fighters and so on. And I'm sure it's happened. It's South Africans have done it, but you don't hear about this kind of thing because there's also no consequences, I think, for people going to go do this kind of thing. We hear about South Africans who are going to go fight for Israel will get prosecuted. But I wouldn't be surprised if, as I say, South Africans are going to go fight for ISIS, and we haven't heard anything about that. And whatever your ideological position is on these things, ISIS is a terrorist group. I don't think there's any real debate about that. And if you're throwing in your lot in with ISIS, you're definitely betraying your country, I think. But yeah, this is, it's as I say, I think it all comes down to the breakdown of the rule of law and breakdown of our various policing agencies. And I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly. The state security agency should be looking into this stuff, not spying on other factions of the ANC or exactly. getting involved in internal ANC politics, which is all it really seems to do these days. Okay, so for our last story, we're going to talk a little bit about an issue that plagues very many South African neighborhoods, but is, I think, a little bit under-discussed, and that is the problem of illegal electricity connections. So many South African neighborhoods, particularly very poor areas, are illegally connected to the grid, often by very amateur kind of electricians who will simply run a line, a cable from the power infrastructure that's largely unguarded or badly maintained, and hook it up to a bunch of houses. And this has all sorts of negative consequences. There's also, of course, the sort of lower key, wealthier version of the electricity theft, which is when people bypass their meters or fiddle with their electrical systems to essentially get free electricity. The obvious costs are that municipalities and Eskom lose a revenue, which they are supposed to be using to provide us with services like infrastructure and the generation of electricity. But there's other problems as well, and these relate to the enormous amount of danger that often comes from illegal connections. Sometimes people get electrocuted in their homes because the bypassing of the meter reduces some of the safeguards on the electrical system. Sometimes you'll have particularly sort of squatter settlements where informal pylons have been put up to carry the electricity wires around, and these are literally just sort of a stick holding up a live wire that falls down. It touches someone, they die. You have sometimes the electrical infrastructure blows up because it's being tapped into and overloaded. That's happened, I know, in a couple of times in areas around the sort of south of Joburg, places quite close to Westbury and Coronationville. So recently there have been three people killed in the Eastern Cape in separate incidents, all involving illegal electrical connections. One was a 26-year-old man who was attempting to connect electricity to his flatlet when he was electrocuted. Another one was a woman who was walking home, and a live wire fell on her from one of these illegal connections, and she died. And also a 24-year-old woman in Rabi Village died after accidentally touching an illegal connection. So, Marius, on one hand, you know, I do sympathize somewhat with people in these positions. You know, sometimes they can't afford electricity. Sometimes the electricity infrastructure has not been provided to them timeously by the state, even though it's been promised. But at the same time, this is, I think, once again, feeding into that lawlessness, the fact that people think that they can just straight up steal electricity. And it has real consequences, not just for the companies and organizations that provide it, but also for people's own lives, with the number of people who die from these things.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It comes down to breakdown of the rule of law and law and order. As you say, people think they can do this kind of thing, and people are dying. And it has all kinds of knock-on effects. And I think your point about it being also, it's not just people living in poor areas who do it. It's also people who are on high incomes. A friend of mine, he actually, Yaron Ekurhuleni, he recently had solar installed at his house. And an official from Ekurhuleni municipality actually came to his house and wanted to look inside because his electricity bill had obviously gone down by quite a lot. And they wanted to make sure that all his connections and everything were legal. Of course, they were. So the official was fine, cool, signed off on it. But it's obvious, like, I think it's probably, and my friend stays in a, you know, a middle-class area in Benoni or whatever. And I think it's probably happening quite a lot that people across the board are, hooking themselves up to illegal electricity connections. And it just comes down to people think there's no consequences and they think they can do what they want. And like I say, it's one thing to be stealing from Eskom or the government. People might consider that a victimless crime. But as you pointed out, yeah, real people have died. And, you know, just apart from the person dying, that has all kinds of, you know, terrible effects for the people's family and friends and all kinds of things. And, yeah, unless rules and laws actually get enforced, this kind of thing will carry on happening, I'm afraid.
Indeed. This is definitely something that municipalities should, I think, take more seriously. Sometimes they don't for political reasons, and sometimes they do for incompetence reasons. But in either case, it should definitely be followed up on to prevent more tragedies like the ones that have happened recently in the Eastern Cape. Anyway, that's all the time we had for today. We hope that you found this show interesting. We will be back tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.